You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And welcome back. We have reached the final hour on this Tuesday night. And we've had a lot of conversation about Saturday, and at some point we will turn the page. But we thought we would get a real expert to break down what happened, right and wrong. And Jordan Rogers joining us. Jordan, we've had this Georgia conversation with you every week. And I'll just sit back, put my feet up, and let you tell us what you saw Saturday afternoon in Georgia.
Well, Paul, I don't want to completely just get the receipts out, but I feel like for a few weeks now I was prepping Georgia fans on Stetson Bennett. Now, there's a lot that went on in this football game to have Alabama score the way they did on this defense. But the one reservation I had about the quarterback position for Georgia was that it was untested, right? There wasn't much adversity that it faced. And if it needed to, could it be a passing attack? Could it be a drop back attack? And really, I just continued the last couple of weeks to look back over the games that they were tested with Stetson Bennett as the quarterback. And the common thread was turnovers. You look back last year, Florida and Alabama, multiple turnovers in both those games. Florida this year, multiple turnovers. And again, at Alabama, almost started the game with a pick six. Jordan Battle probably should have grabbed that first pass and taken it to the house. But two more interceptions. Now, I think Stetson played a lot better than those two interceptions maybe show. Made some really big-time throws down the middle, especially hit Bowers a couple times, made a couple plays with his legs. But again, you're only going to be as good as your quarterback plays in big moments, and his propensity to turn the football over has really been the Achilles heel for Georgia. Again, could they have played better on defense? Yes. Did they need to guard Jamison? Absolutely. Had to run with him, but that was something that we knew might be an issue. So looking forward, I thought there was a moment in the third quarter that Kirby might go to JT just because of the situation they were in, right? This is a quarterback in Stetson and an offense that loves to play action pass. And when they can run the football, their passing game can be vertical. It can play off of the play action. But when you're behind, that's not the case. You need to go more spread. Todd Monken is more of a spread guy. JT fits that mold a little bit more. Now, I don't know if a full change needs to be made, but if you look forward and you have time to prepare for the playoffs and you go, we might be in another opportunity like this, I think JT is still the best option for that type of game. Obviously, they didn't need that this year, which is why Stetson was where he was and the situation they got into. So I don't think it was all bad, but it was the recipe that I thought might happen. The vertical passing game for Alabama was too much, and when Georgia is not able to dictate the football game, that's the result I expected, and that's the result we got.
Jordan, at that point in the game, It was desperation time. Why do you think Kirby Smart stayed the course?
It's tough. If you don't right after half, and I don't think you needed to make the change right after half. Give Stetson one more drive. The problem is Stetson continued to make one or two big throws, one or two plays that you're like, okay, he's not. It wasn't like a Alabama last year or a Florida last year or even a Kentucky last year where it was all bad, Stetson, right? It wasn't. Like, there was the bad decisions, the turnovers, but there were still some good throws. So I think if you're Kirby, he was in a really tough spot because to bring a quarterback cold off the bench that hasn't played a lot of football in that environment is tough. So while your quarterback Stetson's still making a few plays, I think he made the right decision in leaving him out there, rolling with it, and hoping that they could get something going, because at that point, it's a little too late to decide, okay, let's go to the guy that hasn't played in the big moments and hasn't played a lot of significant football in a long time. Now, with the time off to prepare for the playoffs, could be a different story, whether either guy starts, right? At that point, JT could be more prepped for that opportunity if needed. But Stetson just did a little bit each time. You thought, are they going to make a change? Are they going to make a change? So I think it made it tough on Kirby.
Flipping it around defensively, what did you see? How can that be corrected against a different type of team?
Yeah, it's going to be a different attack, right? I mean, Michigan is much more of a physical. They want to run the football. McNamara is not as dynamic, maybe, as Bryce is going to be. So it'll play a little bit more into what they want to do. But against Alabama, it was the deep threat. They couldn't run with Jameson. And also, there's about three breaks, or excuse me, busts in coverage, which is completely out of character for a Kirby Smart defense. That was, you know, the big catch and run by Jameson. And then Jameson just being Jameson. Now, I will say, I think Alabama is going to be different because they struggled in the third quarter when John Metchie wasn't out there. Jameson is a run and catch guy. Metchie is a catch and run guy. And I think they really missed that element in their offense. So something to look forward to for Alabama, or maybe be a little worried about, is not having that element. It's more of a Slade Bolden slot kind of guy, but he's not the dynamic athlete that Metchie is. So I just think it was a buzzsaw for Georgia. It was, you know, these games, we say it, and I don't think it sinks in really. These are about matchups, and it was a bad matchup for Georgia because they have elite speed, one of the best wide receivers in the entire country that can take the top off, and they got into a game that wasn't set up for how they want to play football. So doesn't mean it's going to look the same against Michigan. I think this game against Michigan fits much more into where Georgia lives defensively, not as dynamic of a vertical threat as a Jameson Williams. So they match up much better against Michigan than they would against Alabama, but who knows? They might have to see him again, so they're going to have to fix something.
Jordan, I think it is somewhat premature to look too far ahead, but in the event, I mean, we got 5 weeks to talk about this, not like we're wasting time, but if Georgia and Alabama meet again, what do you think will be different other than possibly the quarterback?
Well, it's going to be so different because there's not John Metchie. When you have a Jameson Williams and a John Metchie, you can't say, okay, let's double team this guy, because you're leaving still one of the best receivers in the entire country one-on-one. And they complement each other's games so well, especially, as I just mentioned, Jameson being a deep guy, Metchie being a guy that works underneath. So without Metchie, now you can go, okay, let's double Jameson. Let's make sure we always have safety rotation over the top of Jameson, and let's make Slade Bolden, Trayshawn Holden, let's make anybody else beat us, anybody else that needs to catch the football, because I don't think they've proven to have a clear-cut game changer outside of Jameson or Metchie. Cam Latu may be a guy that's a little bit more involved. Billingsley's maybe a guy that works a little bit more, but no one's a Metchie. So that will be an interesting thing to see how it develops, because I do think Georgia started to slow them down at some point when the catch and run guy wasn't available in John Metchie. So I think it's better. It'll be a better matchup for Georgia the second time around if, as Georgia fans and maybe us SEC fans want to see, they get another shot at it.
Let's back up to New Year's Eve and talk about Cincinnati in Alabama. I know you've seen a lot of Alabama, and certainly we've all seen Cincinnati from a distance. How does that matchup work?
Well, I think it's interesting. Look, Cincinnati and Desmond Ridder are a good offense, and Alabama, they've gotten better at defense, but right now I think they've improved most up front, and I still think there's some opportunities in the secondary, as we saw with Georgia. Kool-Aid McKinstry still flashes at times and really struggles to play the ball at times. So I think that's something that Cincinnati can take advantage of. If I was the quarterback in Desmond Ridder, I'd walk up to the line of scrimmage. I'd go away from Josh Joe. I'd go at number one until he proved that he could make a play. And I think defensively, it's going to be a tough matchup for Cincinnati, just because of the speed, because Bryce Young's playing at such a high level. And we say it, and he's going to win the Heisman Trophy. He's doing things that, boy, I mean, yeah, Mac Jones and Joe Burrow were doing it, but nobody else this season is doing. Maybe Matt Corral when he was healthy. But Bryce Young, 43 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, the way he's protecting the football, but still takes risks downfield, throws off platform. I think one of the most impressive things he did, and this is something that Cincinnati's going to watch, because when you look at Bryce Young, you go, man, he's not like an elite athlete. He doesn't really scare you running the football per se, but he scares you in those second reaction plays, those times that the pocket breaks down and it looks like he's not paying attention and there's a guy that's got a clear shot, and bam, he'll make a move, get out of the pocket. We saw him be elusive on the run. And usually Bryce Young is a scramble to pass guy. I think Georgia, he made a couple really good plays scrambling to run, and that was kind of an element I don't think we saw a ton of throughout this season, a little bit, but that's something that Cincinnati's going to absolutely have to game plan for. Because without the Metchie, without an extra outlet, we may see Bryce Young lean a little bit more into some of the scrambles, and he's shown to be pretty dangerous doing that.
Jordan Rodgers with a breakdown, and we'll have plenty of time to look ahead. Jordan, thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Outstanding look at what we saw over the weekend and a look ahead. More of your phone calls coming up.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And welcome back. Final 45 minutes on this Tuesday evening. Let's check in with Rick, who is up next in Birmingham. Hello, Rick.
Good afternoon. When Cecil Hurt of the Tuscaloosa News passed away several weeks ago, you made some very nice comments about him, and you mentioned that because of your expansion of your audience, maybe a lot of people didn't know about him, and you made some very nice comments. But that got me thinking that perhaps you ought to introduce him to some of your early Alabama callers, and I thought a real good one to start with would be Chris from Gulf Shores and his story about the girl in the TV. I thought people might be interested in that. Look for somebody.
Yeah, Chris is one of my favorite callers. I still hear from him a lot. He doesn't call much, but that would rank among my favorite stories of all time. And I'll see if we can get Chris on maybe on a Friday night when everybody's in a good mood and tell that story, because it is priceless.
It makes one remember, that's for sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Yeah, we've talked about this a couple of times, and ever since media days with the Oklahoma-Texas story and everything that has transpired, it's been a fairly breakneck fall. But now that things are calming down, we may go a little retro one day and strike up the band and turn back the clocks. That would be a good way to start. Thank you for the call. I really appreciate you remembering. Dennis is up next. Hello, Dennis.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Oh, we're doing well. Thank you.
Been a long time listener. Yeah, I remember you from Fox 6 Sideline.
Oh, sure.
Ago.
Well, thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for taking my call. What I'm calling you about, Paul, is, I hear all these Georgia fans talking about J.P. Daniels needs to come in and this, that, and the other. Well, a head coach is going to live and die by the quarterback that they name as a starter, especially with Stetson Bennett that has been successful all year. So no matter what, come bowl season, Kirby Smart is not going to put J.P. Daniels in. He's not going to start him over Stetson Bennett, because Stetson Bennett got them where they are now. From being a person that played the game, you as a head coach, the starting quarterback that you pronounce as your starting quarterback, from the team's point of view, is they take the respect as a leader from that quarterback. So, yeah, Nick Saban done it, with Jalen Hurts and Tua, but he had the courage to do it. But most coaches are not going to do that, especially with the success that Stetson Bennett had with Georgia this season. I know all the Georgia fans want to see J.P. Daniels against Michigan, this, that, and the other. Well, Kirby Smart is not going to start J.P. Daniels. He's not going to do it. He's going to ride with his quarterback, Stetson Bennett. Now, what Kirby Smart may do from halftime, depending on how the ball game goes, he may introduce J.P. Daniels. But then again, he may not.
Well, listen, we don't know. And I think as we get closer to the game, we'll get a better idea. But the game's 3 weeks off. Thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. Eric is up next. Go right ahead, Eric.
Hi, Paul. Pretending that Georgia Tech leaving the conference, it had nothing to do with not beating the other teams. Because in 1962, Georgia Tech beat Alabama 7-6 at Grant Field. But the gist of it is, at the time, each school gave out 140 scholarships. And Bobby Dodd made a proposal to the other universities to up it to 160 because he didn't want to run anybody off. So, and then he prefaced it by saying, if you do not agree to do this, Georgia Tech is leaving the conference. Well, just think how happy that made Johnny Vaught, Wally Butts, Bear Bryant, and the rest of them who considered them the Texas of the SEC.
Right.
So 2 years later, it took 2 years for Georgia Tech to leave the conference. They left after the 1966 season. So then they became an independent in football and joined a small conference for other sports. And they recognized almost immediately what an error they had gotten themselves into. So, and the ACC, right after the Tech leaving, started asking, come join us, come join us. This went on for about 6 years. And Tech said, no, thank you, no, thank you. But by that time, Georgia Tech was trying and begging to get back into the SEC. And the way you could do that, you had to have a team sponsor you, and then they could have a vote. So every year, Georgia would sponsor Georgia Tech, and then they would all vote no. So after 6 years, Tech says, we will do anything to get back in this conference. Georgia sponsored them. The final vote was 10-0 to not let them back in.
Wow.
Then it gets worse. They named the stadium after the man who single-handedly destroyed their athletic program. It's called Bobby Dodd Stadium, and he single-handedly made that decision for Georgia Tech, and the rest is history.
I was not aware of that. That's interesting. He was a legendary coach. He had some really big years. Not that many, but he had quite a few. But I never, I guess when you're in Alabama, you hear one side of the story. But that was really fascinating. I appreciate you sharing that.
Well, you know, there are many, many other stories like that. And I would hope more time would be spent on your show letting the public know the history of the SEC rather than people ranting and raving.
It's an excellent suggestion. Eric, thank you for the information. Really nice to hear. Let's check in with Dennis, who is in Arizona. Hey, Dennis.
Hi, Paul.
Hi there.
Hi, I'm interested in knowing more about the recruiting process. It seems to be very important. And specifically, what do we know about the role of the local football coach when he basically endorses or welcomes representatives from the universities on his campus? Secondly, I'd like to know, does the SEC have any kind of program to try to increase the percentage of minorities officiating personnel In other words, a football official. Because it seems like to me that especially people of African-American descent are not represented very well as far as numbers of officials. That's what I'd like to
Well, Dennis, thank you for the call. On the latter, I think you'd have to compliment the SEC on its aggressiveness on all areas of that issue. I don't know specifically what their numbers are from an officiating standpoint, but I do know what their intent is, and I'm sure I'll let them speak for that. But I've been around this conference long enough to know how they feel about trying to be inclusive in everything. Thank you very much for the call. K-Dub is up next. Good afternoon.
Brother B's here. We finally talk again. Last time I talked to you, a whole bunch of disrespect was going on. Not from you. Not calling. You knew I would never call and troll you. You had your doubts about it, but it was a lot of disrespect going on. And a week later, here we are. My thing about that last week was, and I called and told you, I'm not going to ask you, do you remember the call? Because I know a lot of people do, and you don't remember these calls. You just be saying, yeah, I was over there. You don't be remembering all these calls. I know you know. You talk to a whole bunch of people every day. But let me tell you what I did tell you Tuesday, last Tuesday. I said, we making this like this is an impossible task, and people have forgot who Alabama is. You forgot who we are. I mean, it was just a total lack of disrespect, and I know you don't like that word. I know you don't like the disrespect word, but it was. Because my thing was, how do the 18-time defending champion don't have a chance? I don't have any problem. Trust me, I don't have any problem with anybody saying, "Well, Alabama, they might not win this game. I'm gonna pick the other team." That's fine. But the narrative was.
Allow me to ask you this, because however many championships Alabama has won, it makes no difference when they're playing a football game in this setting. Mm-hmm. But I would like to know specifically who you are talking about. Was there anybody of substance that disrespected the Alabama Crimson Tide and its coach? I didn't hear that. Maybe from callers, but callers are callers. I mean, they're great, but you're not going to put a lot of weight into what a Georgia fan says about Alabama, are you?
I know, definitely not. So I'm just asking you the question. So the narrative amongst the people with the suits on was it that Alabama didn't have a chance?
Let me try to explain why the overwhelming majority of pundits picked Georgia, because they all bought in to a narrative of how invincible this team was. They had also seen recently, like 7 days before, Alabama need a miracle to beat a pedestrian Auburn team. They saw a similar situation the week before that with Arkansas. And they're not pedestrian, but they're certainly not among the top 10 teams in the country. They saw Alabama have to hold on for dear life against an LSU team. So this narrative began to build upon itself. And when you compared the two, you did worry about Georgia's secondary. You did worry about had they really beaten a great team. But you had to worry the same thing with Alabama.
Trust me, Paul, I understand. Everything you're saying is spot on, and I'm not disagreeing with anything you said.
I don't know where you come off, though, K-Dub, with the most respect intended, as if Alabama is sacrosanct. And you can't have an honest conversation about whether another team is capable of beating them.
That's the whole point. What I'm trying to listen to me, Paul. That's what I'm saying. I have no problem with saying that you think the other team will win, but don't tell me we don't have a chance.
Me what you're upset about.
It was a narrative like we didn't have a chance.
I don't know anybody who said that, K-Dub. I really don't. But please tell me if you can remember.
Well, I'll come up definitely with those names because I don't want to misquote anybody. I promise you I have those names in order. I have the receipts, and I give
tomorrow. Try me on for one of those names here before we run out of time.
Well, I don't want to go to the obvious because he sounds like a fan just like I am. But the Georgia beat writer, though, old Mr.
Hey, K-Dub. I will tell you, you're right about that. Griff can deny it all he wants, but But he was the lead propagator of the Georgia myth. And we heard him every Friday afternoon on this show. So, hey, K-Dub, they're telling me we have to run out of time. I'm going to tell you something. You're right. I agree with you. Thanks for the call. We'll take a short break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
And we welcome you back. Peyton's up next from Nashville. Hello, Peyton.
Paul, what's going on, sir?
Hey, how are you?
Doing good. I was wanting to know, what has Jim ever called into this show and not complained about anything? I mean, has he ever just called you and just talked about sports without complaining about something?
I'm sure he has.
I mean, it's like somebody's got a blowtorch.
Don't ask me when, but...
Anyway, is there any way that we can get the college football playoff to be played as the last set of bowl games? I mean, how come they have the college football playoff, and then we got to go watch all these meaningless bowls after it? I mean, do you eat dessert before your main entree?
No, I've always found this one to be pretty strange. But it's, you know, for some reason the CFP wants to play this game on New Year's Eve. I've never understood it. It's an absolutely dreadful day to have a bowl game. You know, when they had Saturday available, there's a reason for it, though, and it's about the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl, the infatuation with not being able to move the Rose Bowl to any other day but New Year's Day is why you're seeing the CFP on Friday this year and then everything else on Saturday. We should see more games on Friday. And the CFP should be Friday. The semis should be on Saturday afternoon, Saturday night. That's a natural place for them, instead of stuck on at 3:30 on New Year's Eve when you still have people working. I remember being in Dallas 5 or 6 years ago for the Alabama semifinal, and we were driving over the stadium, and a lot of people were. I mean, not that people were interested in the game, but a considerable amount of people were still working and going about life. Even though it is New Year's Eve. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's continue with Harold in Florida. Hello, Harold.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. First of all, I'd like to say I enjoy when you interview with Nicole Arbach.
Thank you.
I don't know what Jim's problem was. He doesn't know her at all, really. And how you could say you hate somebody without knowing them doesn't make sense.
It makes no sense.
And what she has to say has relevance, and I really enjoy it. Got a couple questions for you. Number one, so we got Billy Napier came down here on Sunday, went right to work recruiting. He's basically replacing the entire staff, I think, except for Vernon. What's his name?
That's okay. Vernon. We'll figure it out.
Anyway. He's basically replacing the whole staff. he's hitting the recruiting trail. My worries is here in Florida, just got announced that Mario Cristobal is now the head coach for Miami. And there's a rumor going around that he's going to be hiring the guy that was the offensive coach for LSU. What was his name? Brady?
Joe Brady, yeah.
Joe Brady, have you heard anything about that?
I saw a report. Brady was let go by Carolina the other day, and I did see his name connected to Miami. But I will say this, and we talked about it briefly yesterday with Pete Thamel, and I think I think Napier will be fantastic. But Mario Cristobal in South Florida is going to affect a lot of schools, Alabama, Georgia, and maybe even Florida, because he is a phenomenal recruiter.
That's what I was worried about, and you got a lot of talent down here, yeah, as you know, South Florida. And I don't know, Napier, a lot of people are coming down on this guy Napier, don't even know him, but immediately he went to work as soon as he got here, sending out people all over to have meetings with players. So I'm kind of impressed with this guy. I'm kind of looking forward to what he's going to do for Florida.
Well, he's a no-nonsense coach. He's has great credentials, which is obvious. He wouldn't have gotten that job otherwise, but he is a strong recruiter. I talked to Dan Mullen Saturday in Atlanta, and you know, he pushed back on the narrative that he can't recruit. But ultimately, what he couldn't do is out-recruit Kirby Smart, which only one other person has been able to do. Let's continue with more phone calls here, and Ty is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Ty.
Hey, how you doing, Paula? I've been trying to get on this show for the longest. I thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just had I know people have been talking about this Georgia quarterback situation ad nauseum, but what I want to just stress to everybody is that it's not necessarily the player. It's not necessarily that you think that JT Daniels is such a better player than Bennett. It's the fact of what it conveys to your team. You know, like when Saban brought in Tua, it conveyed to the team, hey, we believe that we'll do anything that it'll take to win this game. And the irony of it is that the next year against Georgia, Saban reversed and then brought Hurts in for Tua. But why was he able to do that? Because Hurts stayed. Because all the team bought into the fact that they were playing for a coach that was going to do whatever he could to win the game. And I think that Alabama didn't become a better team after that switch. They just realized that, hey, this is a coach that is willing to do whatever it takes to put us in the best position to win the game. And they rallied around that. So it's not necessarily that everybody should think that Daniels is just such a better option, but it's that you're sending a statement to your team. Hey, I brought you all this way, and I'm going to play all the cards on the deck to help you win this game. That's first point. Second point, really quick, is I have my doubts. Why would you go to JT Daniels now? The difference between JT Daniels and Bennett is that Bennett is the more mobile quarterback. So do you want a classic drop-back passer against that Michigan pass rush? So now it's even more of a reason for him to stay with Bennett, because JT Daniels is probably the worst matchup against this defensive line. That's all I have.
It's well said, and thank you very much for your call. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.